Moving on, next is to select the zone district option that will be used for the 2018 and 2020 board elections. And I will turn it over to the experts.
Yeah, let me, if I may, just take a second, just again, remind everyone who the players are here tonight. So to the right is Kim Manolis. He is the attorney that has been representing us and keeping us honest through this process and...
Is that a hard thing to do?
Very simple.
And keep us, most important though, is keep us on the timeline so that we do not run into a violation of the situation that would cause us to have significant costs associated with it. And then Paul Mitchell to his right is the demographer that Kim hired, Kim recommended hiring. And Paul was the one that drew the three plan options. And so what I asked, what I'd like Paul to do again, even though we've done this once before, is just sort of briefly review the three and maybe what some of the similarities and then some, the one or two differences. And because tonight we really should select which plan we want to use, plan one, two, or three. We do not have to select tonight which of the five districts are going to be contested next November. There'll be three of those. We don't have to do that to the February meeting. But at this meeting, we should select, are we going with plan A, plan one, plan two, or plan three? So Paul, if you would just kind of review one more time what this is, and then again, any suggestions that you might have.
Sure. Happy to be here with you again today and go over the redistricting for your district going forward to 2018 and 20, and obviously we would relook at this after the next census. As you recall, the reason we're here is because the California Voting Rights Act has been pushing districts, whether it be cities, school boards, water boards, or agencies like yours, into districted systems where instead of having individuals elected to the board in an at-large scenario, they are trying to get people to be elected by district, only by the voters within that district. And so we, for the purposes of moving through this, have provided you with data on the demographics of the district. In prior meetings, I've laid out where the different ethnic populations are, looked at different ways to draw district lines in this area, incorporating where the transportation paths are, where the cities are. We even looked at the local school district lines to see if there was anything we could glean from the boundaries that they adopted in the same process that they did a few years ago. And so in creating these and developing these plans, we came up with three base plans which had basically been unchanged since our first presentation of these lines. And a lot of these lines look very similar to, you know, a layperson, in part because the way the district is laid out lends itself to a certain kind of construction of the lines. And so as an example, in each of these three plans, the District A, which is the Redwood City District, the district most to the northeastern portion of the area, it's essentially the same district in each plan. In achieving the goal population, there's this real natural boundary of the 101. And in each of the plans, it didn't seem to make sense to do a lot of diving across that natural boundary to connect people who live on, you know, that eastern side with people who are from, you know, San Carlos, Belmont, Atherton, and other areas that might not be kind of culturally connected or might not see themselves as being the same population. Again, another kind of natural kind of factor in this redistricting is that you have areas that are very dense in population, other areas that are very, very low population numbers relative to their size. And so on the western side, west of the 280 and to the southern tip of the district, you have an area with very, very, very low density population. And as a result, that area essentially has to be paired with a higher density area in order to reach the population number necessary to keep the districts balanced. And so essentially we have this open question. This area to the west of the 280, in order to get the two-thirds or so of the population it needs, is it most natural to pair that area with Belmont? Most natural to pair that area with the West Menlo Park Atherton area? Or some balance of the two? So in trying to preserve the communities as much as possible, be aware of the ethnic populations and their densities, be aware of these other kind of natural geographic boundaries, we're able to come up with these three different plans. The first plan answers this question of that low density population, where do we fit this in with? Well, in this one, we fit it in with Atherton, West Menlo Park, into the southern portion. In the second plan, we did the same thing, but then we gave that low density population area to two different districts. We gave a portion of it to the Belmont area and a portion of it to the Atherton area. And in the third plan, we took that low population area to the west of the 280 and essentially paired it entirely with the city of Belmont and portions of San Carlos. Now, this third plan also is the only plan in which the District D is most densely populated with the heavily Latino population. And in fact, if you look at that portion of the plan, the district population of Latinos in that version of D is 44%. It's the highest percentage of Latino population that any of the plans have. Now, for the record, these plans were not drawn specifically to try to maximize the ethnic population of those districts, but as a drawing of the natural district through using the other boundaries and so on, we were able to get that up to the 44%. And in that plan, we're over 50% if you were to combine all the different ethnicities, Asians, Latinos, and African Americans. There's a term for that called a coalition district. And so if we were in a situation of a federal Voting Rights Act question, and we had data to prove that the African Americans, Latinos, and Asians in this area vote as a coalition, then this would be something that we'd have to look at more seriously. We don't have data to suggest that for this area, but it is worth noting that this is the only plan that allows you to achieve kind of that over 50% of a coalition.
Are you suggesting that's good or bad?
It would be good under the Federal Voting Rights Act to look at that. It's not something that is operative in the State Voting Rights Act, but it is something that, if we were really, really, really focusing on a civil rights claim from the federal side, we would be looking at this term called a coalition district in that area. So looking at these different maps, I think really it's up to the decision of the board. At this point, all these three maps, I think Kim is fine with all of them in terms of their functionality for the CVRA. And it's about balancing how you perceive the district to be. And then also, not primarily, but maybe secondarily or kind of as a third consideration, how dense that population is of the minority population in District D and Plan 3. I think that might be something that could help that plan become a preferred plan simply because of that one little element.
Do you have a number of the voters in each of the three plans, the total number of voters?
I have done a different layout at a prior meeting that had the actual voter count. I don't have it right on me, but I could get it for you.
Well,
the population count is what's really important. The population.
I understand that, yeah. But I'm interested in the voter count.
Yeah, so the voter count has been provided to the board at a prior meeting, and I can get it for you.
But doesn't the law require you to do it by population?
Yes.
You may find it interesting that that isn't the way the law is.
I think he understood that it was.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I can address this to both of you. Which of these three plans do you think would fly best, given your experience with other communities? Which one do you think would fly best and be most satisfactory to the community at large?
I don't feel qualified to say, because I don't know your district like you do.
Well, other politicians in Washington aren't qualified, may say.
Well, that's a big problem.
I don't think it's an answerable question, right?
You don't think so?
I mean, you have to do a referendum and see which one they prefer. There's no way other than intuition here for someone to come up with an answer.
Unless you have just a feeling which one you think would work that best.
I'd like to see the numbers.
I can get you those.
Shouldn't the question be, what plan affords the most equity in voting? And I think we had that discussion, we said number three, right? The last time.
If you were to measure it, so if you're able to say that all these three plans meet the checkboxes of, they're contiguous, they're compact, they're drawn to protect cities and communities, and then as an additional thing, they do provide a greater possibility for, in this district, the Latino population or the coalition to elect a candidate of their choice, then Plan 3 does do a better number version of that based solely on the numbers. And then you get into a conversation later about potentially election dates and ways to even maximize the voting power of that area by putting their election date into a presidential cycle versus a gubernatorial cycle and things like that. But it can't be the primary and only concern, but it should be something that's on the table and discussed.
But it is fair to say that the reason this whole exercise is taking place is to see how to get better representation from minority groups, is it not? I mean, or is the law stated in some other, you know, funny way?
It's essentially the argument of the California Voting Rights Act is that by having an area with racially polarized voting and an area where the minority population could have a greater ability to influence the election, that's what has triggered us to be here. But there isn't an outcome-based measurement in the California Voting Rights Act. It doesn't say we're expecting you to create districts that do X, Y, and Z. It's just trusting that you'll follow the normal process and that that wouldn't have the natural outcome. So it is an interesting, it's a semantics thing, essentially.
Another way of asking the question would be, if you had 3-year plans, or let's say there was a fourth plan, and the fourth plan showed that the minority population, the most you got up to is 20%. Mm-hmm. And you had these four plans now, one is 44 and one is 20, and the 20 was approved. Wouldn't the public sort of look at that and say, what was that all about? I mean, it would be sort of nonsensical to me to choose one that was the least likely to enfranchise the minority population. Mm-hmm. Am I smoking dope or is
no, not at all.
You might be, but not in that kind of moment.
We are in California. It's not January 1st yet.
Lee,
some of us are ahead of our
time. Lee, what you handed us, from what I'm gathering then, you're saying that number three by 600, 700 people has the most diverse minorities in
yes.
it?
Yes. I don't know about you. I didn't count the people,
yeah.
but
yeah.
it's
so
the
he
highest.
He just added up 44, the 4, and the 8. Yeah. And that's how we got 56.
Is this one that doesn't have voting, doesn't have actual voting?
I don't have that. No wonder I'm confused.
What I tried to do.
It's in your packet.
Okay. Oh. Yeah. A secret plan.
So right now those charts are on three different pages, and just that handwritten thing I did, just put them all on one page so that you can look at it without having to look at the three pages.
Got it.
I had a question based on, I know you're looking at the information that Jack asked for, Paul, but based on that. Who votes on one election is not necessarily going to dictate who votes at the next election.
Right.
And so in order to get you to give an understanding of voter behavior, you'd have to look over maybe 5 or 6 elections to get a pattern that would make any sense. I mean, if you provided that information on the most recent election, but the most recent election maybe was not a presidential election, that might change dramatically, and then you'd have to have some patterns. So even though I respect asking for that question, I'm not really sure it's going to give you any information that's valuable unless you look over some
but
period
I'm not
of
sure
time.
That Paul isn't looking up eligible voters, not voting voters.
Eligible voters is that CVAP value.
You already
that's
have
the,
that.
That's a number you currently have.
Is that the information I'm looking
for? That is eligible voters.
Jack, is that?
Nope.
You have this in your packet?
I don't have it in my packet.
Limit up.
That's the eligible voter population, that's the one that the Supreme Court has said that we're supposed to use as a proxy for voters. Now, I can't, yeah, I can bring up the actual voter population, and that's what I was doing right now, because I have the state voter file, and I've got it merged into the.
I agree with Lee, I think that is, I wouldn't say meaningless, but not very useful.
Unless you have a pattern over a long standard.
Because in fact, the whole purpose of this is to try and increase people's willingness, interest in voting, because now they have some more voting power. So to me, that doesn't.
You're even more mistaken in the process.
I question the lumping of the Asian population in with Latinos and Black. Why is that done? That doesn't seem to make sense to me.
So the argument of putting together all three populations based on how the courts have determined this is that if the area is shown to have voting patterns where these ethnic populations are voting as a coalition against a white population, so that's basically how it's being broken down. If there's data to suggest that, which we haven't deeply explored in this district, then you could call that a coalition. So like as an example in Glendale, which is one of the areas that I've done redistricting, for some reason the Armenians and Latinos, they vote as a coalition. If there's an Armenian candidate, the Armenians will vote for Armenians, Latinos will vote for Latinos. But when there's other candidates or issues, the Armenians and Latinos vote together. And we've seen this in different parts of the state, where, as an example, African Americans and Latinos in some parts of LA, depending on the election, will vote as a coalition, and in other elections they'll vote separate from each other.
We're talking about Asian. I don't see the Asian as aligning themselves with Latino and Black.
We would have to look at the data deeply to really investigate that. And in fact, oftentimes, even within the Asian population, they don't vote with each other. So if you look at like statewide elections, when John Chung ran for state treasurer, there were Vietnamese population in Orange County that voted against John Chung, even though he's Asian and they're Asian. But even within the Asian population, there sometimes isn't cohesiveness. So it's worthwhile, it's smart to question that they would be voting as a coalition, but that's the terminology used when people look at the three groups together.
Well, I would like to make a motion that we approve number three. I mean, we can continue to have discussion, but I would like to put on the table that we approve map three or whatever we.
Can I have a second?
Draft plus
second.
Okay, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Having number three? Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. Very good. The motion carries. So we're going with plan three. Thank you. Okay, moving on.